This is Jeff Oswald here at Concordia Seminary, ready to sit down and talk with you through the Gospel for the fourth Sunday in Lent in Year A of the three-year lectionary. The text, as it's listed in the lectionary, gives you the full chapter of John 9 as one option, or an abbreviated version. This chapter is so well done, and as Raymond Brown points out, this is John's storytelling skill at its best, so that we will just take a few extra minutes here and go through the whole chapter verse by verse so that we don't miss anything. Then, of course, if you decide you only want the abbreviated version read, you'll certainly have the whole story in your mind as you construct your message. Again, as Brown has noted, the story shows consummate artistry, he says. No other story in John's Gospel is so closely knit. So that from a literary point of view, this story really stands out. And, of course, it's no wonder that it's a favorite for so many people. I think there may be another reason why this text draws us in so well. As Kestra points out in his book on symbolism in John, the story is perhaps first of all a story about discipleship, what it means to become and be a follower of Jesus. It also gives lessons, I guess we could say, for the disciple who knows he will be encountering opposition because he is a follower of Jesus. Now, we see that in particularly in the end, as the former blind man is cast out of the synagogue. But finally, Kester reminds us, this is simply a story about humanity in its relationship with God. We never are given a name for this blind man. He's introduced simply as someone blind from birth. And the disciples assume this blindness is a result of God's judgment on him. The Pharisees tell him that he was born utterly in sin. And his movement from this blindness to sight, and from ignorance to knowledge, from unbelief to faith, shows that in many ways he represents all of us. And I think that's why, again, this is such a great text to preach on, because whether we're thinking of ourselves as disciples of Jesus already, or as those who long to know him truly, those who long to know him at all, those who feel blind and unable to see our way through life, this story has something to say for us. Let's begin then, right at verse 1. This comes on the heels of several episodes dealing with the Feast of the Tabernacles, where Jesus is in Jerusalem at the temple, making many connections between the celebration and its images and himself, with water and light particularly standing out. There is no transitional phrase in terms of a passage of time or a new location. It's dangerous to assume that that means this happens immediately after the events of chapter 8 and that we're still at the location. On the other hand, we have to acknowledge that John doesn't tell us that we're dealing with a new time and place. So the text begins, as Brown notes rather abruptly, with simply a chi, and, often translated in our English versions as now, that is, starting a new narrative. And paragon, passing along, aiden anthropon typhlon, ek genetes. He saw. And, of course, no subject is announced. We just assume this is Jesus who has hidden himself and passed out of the crowd that was threatening him, but now is surely visible to people, although it's interesting, isn't it? The first person he encounters is a blind man. Anthropon typhlon, a man, a blind one, ek genetes. kind of an idiomatic phrase from birth. Kai erotezan auton, hoi mathetai autu legontes. And then our verb erotezan, the aorist of erotao. We'll see this verb in several of its forms in chapter 9. They asked him, that is, now in the nominative, the disciples of him. So his disciples asked him, and then with the participle introducing their question, legontes, saying, Rabbi, tis hemartin, houtos e hoi gones autu, hina tyflos genethe. Rabbi, who sinned, hemartin, sinned in the aorist there from hamartano, this one, probably actually pointing at him then, the demonstrative pronoun, or hoi gones autu, his parents. Gones is a word that's not too familiar to us. It occurs in Christian literature only in the plural. It's a third declension noun, gonus, goneos. But his parents. That, here the hina clearly shows the result. Wouldn't have been a purpose of anyone sinning, but the result of someone's sin is that tyflos genethe. Genethe is the aorist subjunctive passive, subjunctive because of the hina, of genao, to be born, in the passive voice there. So that he was born blind. Verse 3, apokrithe Jesus, Jesus answered, ute houtos hemartin, ute hoi gones autu, al hina phanerothe ta erga tu theu in auto. So, neither this man sinned, nor his parents, but in order that the works of God might be made manifest in him, might be revealed or shown or appear in him. That seems to be an incomplete sentence. Keener in his commentary says we should just keep going and drop the period at the end of verse 3. In order that the works might be manifested, we must do the works. But clearly the idea is that this whole situation cannot simply be written off as a result of some individual sin, but here is an opportunity to see God at work. As Brown points out, they asked Jesus about the cause of his blindness. Jesus talks in terms of its purpose. Now, as humans, we can't always see God's purpose. But it's interesting that instead of arguing about it as sort of a legal claim, Jesus turns this into an opportunity for God to work in their midst. And there is then certainly powerful application for us in that. Continuing in verse 4 then, Hemas de ergadzestai ta erga tu pempsantos me heos hemura esten. So, de, the impersonal verb, it is necessary, and then you usually have an accusative subject of an infinitive following. So the hemas, it is necessary that we do the works, and now instead of simply of God, we have in the genitive the works of the one who sent, from pempo, me, sent me. Many have noted the change from first person plural, it's necessary for us, to singular, who sent me, and even in the manuscripts you can see attempts to make the two the same, going in both directions. But it's I think, true that Jesus is here including his disciples in this work, but the focus is on his mission and his being sent. So they are drawn into that without the focus being switching from Jesus to them. And then the heos here in the sense of while or as long as. So while it is day. And of course day has rich meaning in John's gospel. This is the day when the light is present, the day of salvation. All of those ideas along as long as well as the length of a person's life. So then, erketai nux hote udes dunetai ergadzestai. Because night is coming when the hote, the temporal particle there, udes dunetai, no one is able to work. Continuing in verse 5 then, hotan ento cosmo o phos emi tu cosmu. Here the hotan seems a little bit strange in terms of suggesting contingency in a subjunctive kind of way. Often it means whenever or if ever. Here it has to be taken as sort of while, when, simply when. And then the O is the present subjunctive of Amy, the first person singular. When I am in the world, phos Amy tu cosmu, I am the light of the world. This is not an ego Amy statement from John, but it clearly draws on one of the main metaphors, the main symbols in John's gospel, as Jesus announces that he is the light, so that actually his presence defines the day. Barrett reminds us that also the world has rich theological meaning. This is the world that is opposed to God and to his Christ. It's the world that God loved so much he sent his son into it. So there are clearly also overtones of salvation here, that he is in the world so that the world might believe and not perish. 6. Tauta epon. So saying, having said these things, notice there is no conversation at all with the blind man himself. But having said these things, eptusen chamai, kai epoiesin pelon ek tu tismatos, kai ep ekrisin autu ton pelon epi tus athalmus. The first verb there, eptusen, is one of my favorites because it's the perfect example of onomatopoeia. Ptuo is the Greek word for spit. So having said these things, he spat. Chamai is an adverb that means toward the ground or onto the ground. And he made pelon, is clay, or if you take the texture of clay, then it can be mud, any sort of thing, mixture of dirt and moisture that's soft and pliable. So he made mud from the ptismatos, what he had spit, that is his saliva or spit, and epekrizen, from epikrio, he rubbed it, spread it or smeared it, epitus ophthalmus, on the eyes of him. That is, he smeared the mud. Notice the word order there seems jumbled, but you can see a kind of emphasis. He smeared it on him, the mud, that is, on the eyes. Kai apen auto, and now Jesus said to him, that is, the blind man, hypage nipsai estain kolumbethron tu siloam ha Herme nuetai apostalmenos. He said to him, go, from hypago, here the present imperative, and nipsai, from nipto, the aorist imperative in the middle, go wash yourself in the kolumbethron, is actually a pool that could be for swimming or bathing, that is, for simply enjoyment or for cleansing. But here, of course, the emphasis is on the cleansing power of it. The pool of Siloam. As Bedeg points out, this was a water supply system in Jerusalem that brought the water from the spring Gihon into the fortress of David. So this pool was then probably the basin into which that water emptied when it came into the city. John interprets the name Siloam for his readers by saying, which translated, that is from hermeneuo, the hermeneutical verb, is the sent one, from apostello. And in John's Gospel, of course, Jesus is the one who is sent. Now you'll see a lot of debates about does this etymology actually work, and clearly John is wanting to make a point here that this water is not miraculous in and of itself, but it is healing the person in connection with the word of the one who sends him to it, the one who was sent by God to bring sight to the blind. Okay, op eilthen, again, no dialogue with the man, no expressions of hesitancy or doubt or even confusion, but simply op eilthen, he went un then, kai enipsata, and washed himself, kai eilthen blepon, and he came, the participle there of manner, he came seeing. Okay, verse 8. Hoi un getones kai hoi thearuntes auton ta proteron hoti prosaites ein elegon. The neighbors and the ones who had seen him, the ones who were seeing him ta proteron, that formerly that prosaites ein, that he was a beggar. Here you have, again, a somewhat confusing, perhaps, syntax, that they saw him, namely the one who was formerly a beggar. The sense is clear enough. And they were saying, or began to say, Ukh hutas esten ha kathemenos kai prosaiton. Ukh here is the question word that anticipates an affirmative answer. That is, not simply, is he the one, or but more like, it is him, isn't it? He is the one who, kathemenos kai prosaiton, who sits and begs, isn't he? Aloi elegon hoti hutas esten. So others were saying, yes, it is. That is, they were answering the question. Aloi elegon, others still, we would add, were saying uhi, certainly not. Ala homoios auto esten. No, it's simply someone homoios auto, someone who looks like him or resembles him. Ekenos elegon, that one, that is the man who had been blind, the one they were asking about, he said that, or simply hoti here as the indication of direct discourse, that is, we translate it with a comma and quotation marks, that one, he said, ego eimi, I am. Now, without getting too homiletical here, this is not perhaps a place for discoursing on whether baptism makes of a person a new man. We certainly know that's true and is more a focus of other sections of John's Gospel. But at least here there is a bit of irony that the crowd seems to be saying, are you the same man or are you a different one? And he says simply, I am. It's me. Verse 10, then, elegon, un, then they were saying auto to him, pos un, eine ochthezon su hoi ophthalmoi. How is it then, pos, interrogative of manner, how then is it that the eyes of you, eine ochthezon, it's the aorist passive, were opened. How is it that your eyes were opened? Op ekrithe ekenos, and that one now, so the former blind man said, ha anthropos, the man, ha legomenos Jesus, the man who is called Jesus. You see how distant his relationship is with Jesus at this point, that he doesn't even show confidence in knowing his name. So the one that is called Jesus, pelon epoiesin, he made mud, kai epikrisenmu, tus ophthalmus, and he smeared my eyes, he applied it to my eyes, kai epenmoi, and he told me, again, hoti with direct discourse here, hipage, go to Siloam, kai nipsai, and wash. Apelthon un, kai nipsamenas, aneblepsa. Going away then, and nipsamenas, having washed myself, so having gone and having washed myself, aneblepsa. I see again. There's some discussion on the prefix ana here with blepto. Ana generally has the sense of again. This man can't technically be said to have regained his sight because he had never been able to see. But the verb can mean more generally simply to be healed. That is, for something that should have been able to see, now can see. But I think there may also be at least hints of the kind of play on ana that we saw back in chapter 3, with seeing again or seeing from above, sort of like born again or born from above. Since sight plays such an important role in this whole chapter. So he does see. Verse 12, kai epen auto, and they said to him, pu esten ekenos. So where is that one? Where is that man you're talking about? Lege uk oida. And he says, I don't know. It's important to watch from here on statements about people knowing something or not knowing something. That kind of drives the whole narrative. Okay, verse 13 then. Agusen auton pros tus pharisaius ton pota tiflon. So they lead, John now switches to historic presence, they lead him to the Pharisees, that is, the pota tiflon. The former, the once blind man, the ex-blind man. Ein de sabaton en he hemura ton pelon epoiesin ho Jesus kai aneoxen autu tus ophthalmus. This was a Sabbath, that is, on the day when Jesus made the mud and opened the eyes of him, that is, of the blind man. The wording here, too, seems a little bit more difficult than it might need to be, and the manuscript tradition shows attempts at smoothing it out, but again, the meaning is clear. The day on which he did these things, on the day which he did these things, it was the Sabbath. Very briefly, this is significant because this forces the question of who does things on the Sabbath. And the charge, of course, is laid against Jesus several times that it's wrong, he's breaking the law to be doing things on the Sabbath. And even some commentaries I noticed forget that there is only one exception to that. If Jesus is God, then he's not breaking the law by working on the Sabbath. And him choosing to do things on the Sabbath then forces people to raise this question. 15. Palin un eroton auton kai ho pharisaioi pos aneblepsin. So once again then, they were asking him, even the Pharisees, how he regained his sight, how it was that he could see now. Hade epen autois, but he said to them, Pelon ep etheken mu, epi tus ophthalmus, kai en nipsamen, kai blepo. So he placed epitithemi there in the aorist. He placed mud upon the eyes of me, on my eyes, kai en nipsamen, and I washed myself. Again, aorist middle from nipto. And blepo, I am now seeing, and I see, present tense. elegon un ek ton pharisaion tines. Some of the Pharisees then were saying, uk estin hutos para theu ha anthropos. He is not this one, this man from God. That is, that's not his origin or the source of his power or authority. Because, that is, we know this, we can assert this, because utere, he does not keep the Sabbath. He does not observe the Sabbath. Alloi de elegon, but others were saying, post dunitai anthropos hamartolos. How is it that a man who is sinful, a sinful man, is able, has the capability, toyauta, semea, such signs as these, poiein, to do, the infinitive going back to the dunitai, able to do. Kai schisma ein en autois, and there was a division, a dissension among them. 17. Legusen un to tiflo palin. And they say again to the blind man, Tisu leges peri autu. What do you say concerning him? And then the haughty, some have translated this as the haughty of indirect discourse, that do you say that he opened your eyes? But here I think Barrett is right, that haughty can mean something like with regard to the fact that, and as he notes, that's the perfect sense for it here. So what do you say concerning him with regard to the fact that he opened your eyes? Hade apin, but he said that prophetes estin. He said that he is a prophet. And again, not attempting to identify Jesus with one of the Old Testament prophets in particular, but that a man able to do a sign like this must be out of the ordinary. And prophet was probably the only category he could draw on to explain someone healing the blind. 18. Uk epistuzon. It's a very significant verb there. The Jews did not believe. They did not come to faith then concerning him. They didn't believe at all that ein tiflos, that he was blind and on eblepson and now saw again or now could see. Heos hatu ephonezon tus gones autu tu aneblepsontos. Haos here with hatu from hostis. This is the genitive neuter, is a kind of set phrase or idiom. They didn't believe any of this until they called over his parents to question them. Okay. Then we continue in verse 19. Erotezon autus legontes, so they asked them, they asked his parents, saying, this one, is he your son? Estin ha huias humon. Hon humes legete hati tiflos egenethe. So this one, is he your son, whom you say or whom you claim that he was born blind? Pos un, how then, blepe arti, does he now see? Verse 20, apokrithezon un hoi genes autu kai apon. And they answered, that is his parents, and they said, oidamen, notice again our verb, we know that hutas estin ho huios hemon, we know that this man is our son, kai hati tiflos egenethe, and we know that he was born blind. Verse 21, poste nun blepe uk oidamen, but how it is that now he sees uk oidamen, we do not know. A tis enoixen autu tus ophthalmus, or who it is that anoigo, that opened his eyes, this we do not know. Hemes, we ourselves, uk oidamen, we don't know. Auton erotesate. And here's the erotao again in the aorist imperative. You, plural, ask him. Helikion eche. He has age, that is, he's old enough. He's of legal age, we would say. Autos peri autu lalese. He will speak himself concerning himself. Keener says that to be of legal age here means that the man must have been at least 13 years old. Now, certainly he could have been older than that. But Keener also notes that because both of his parents are living, we should probably not assume, at least, that the blind man was an old man, that is, even perhaps middle ages. To have both parents still living suggests that maybe he was young enough that the Pharisees sought his parents because they thought they might give a more reliable testimony. Okay, 22. Tauta epon hoi gones autu hoti ephabunta tus judaeus. These things his parents said, epon. Hoti, because ephabunta, because they were fearing or were afraid of the Jews. Ede gar sinetethenta hoi judaeoi hina eantis auton homologese Christon apa synagogas genetai. Okay, for Ede, already, sin etethein ta, from sintithemi, the Jews had decided together, that is, generally following discussion or deliberation, the Jews had decided with Hina here giving them the content of their decision. Now, what follows should presumably have been a future less vivid condition with the subjunctive with on and then the future. But the Hina then influences the final verb, so you get if anyone should confess or say that he is Christon, the Messiah, apa synagoges genetai, he will be out of the synagogue, that is, thrown out, he will become. So genetai here you have in the subjunctive because of the hina. So if anyone should ever do this, this is what will happen to him. Verse has, of course, sparked much debate and has had a big influence on the way the whole chapter has been read. Barrett, for instance, says this is simply unthinkable that at this time this practice would have been going on. But notice that the problem often is the text is forced to say more than it actually says, and this is not claimed to be anything like a widespread official policy. But the parents knew that this had already been happening. That we have no evidence that this was happening simply forces us to deny our text from John as evidence that it was happening. So there's no need to say that this sentence describes a situation that only held for the end of the first century, that is, when John is ministering in his congregation and writing his gospel. But that there was already opposition to Jesus and a response to anyone who was claiming that he was Christ by expulsion from the synagogue. Verse 23, diatuta, on account of this, for this reason, hoi gones autu epon, hoti helikion eche. On account of this, his parents said he is of age, ep erotesate, here a little bit stronger form of erotao, ask him or direct all your questions to him. Ephoneson un ton anthropon ek deuteru. So they called, or probably in this case had called or summoned. So they had this man summoned again, ek deuteru, a second time, hos ein tiflos kai apon autu, the one who was blind, and they said to him, dos doxon to theo. Literally, dos is the imperative for didomi, give glory to God. But in pragmatic terms, this was a way of saying, give glory to God by telling the absolute truth. If you lie, you will be bringing shame upon God, and his punishment will be visited upon you. So this was a phrase used to show the seriousness of an interrogation and to make sure that the person being questioned answered truthfully. Hemes oidamen. Now notice again who's saying this. This is the Jews. We know that, hoti, hutos ha anthropos ha martolos estin. We know that this man, that is the one you're talking about, the one you said healed you, this man is sinful. Apokrithe un ekenos, so that man, that is the former blind man, answered, e hamartolos estin uk oida. If or whether he is sinful, uk oida, I don't know. Hen oida, one thing I do know, I at least know this one thing. Hoti tiflos on arti blepo. That, this is what I know, the content, that, being blind, now I see. Apon un auto. Then they said to him, ti apoie sen soi, pos enoik sen su tus ophthalmus. Ti apoie sen soi, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? 27, apokrithe autois, he answered to them, he replied to them, apon humin, ade, kai uk ekusate. I told you already, and you did not listen. Ti palin thelete akuin. Ti here in the sense of why. Why again do you wish to hear? Me kai humes thelete autu mathetai genestai. Here may, remember, expects a negative answer. It's not true, is it, that you also wish to be his disciples, to become his disciples? Something like, don't tell me that you also want to become his disciples. Is that why you want to hear so much about him? Of course, this response and its sarcasm was not appreciated by the Jews. Kai eloi doreson. They reviled him or rebuked him and said, "Su mathetes e ekenu." What are you talking about? Us becoming his disciples? You a ekenu. You are a disciple of that one, with ekenu probably having a full sort of pejorative sense. Hemes de tu moiseos esmen mathetai. But we, for our part, we ourselves, we are disciples of Moses. The expression disciple of Moses seems rather strange. It's not a typical biblical expression. It's interesting that Brown, in his commentary, cites the Edgerton Papyrus number 2, which seems to be a strange sort of mixture of passages or themes from John's Gospel together with material from some of the synoptics. But there's a verse in there that I think suggests what this means to be a disciple of Moses, where Jesus speaks to the rulers of the Jewish authorities and says something to them about Moses on whom they had put their hopes. So Moses is the one they're pinning all of their hopes on. Hemes oidamen hoti moise lelale ken hotha os. So again, we know that God, in the nominative, Lelalekin, has spoken, the perfect here, to Moses. That is, that this sort of still stands as the true situation. Not that God once spoke to him, but that God has spoken to Moses. But Deatutan, this one, this guy, Uk Oidamen, again, we don't know, Pothin Estin, where he is from. It's interesting that at various places in John's Gospel, Jesus' opponents will say, we know where you're from, and they're wrong. And they'll say, we don't know where he's from, and they're wrong. Here, they probably mean this as a slur, if not on his education alone, then possibly also on his parentage. Minimally, it says he's a nobody. We've never heard of him. If he were important, we would know about him. Apokrithe ha anthropos kai apen autois. The man, now the blind man, answered and said to them, and tutogar ta thaumaston estin. Here too, this is a little bit strange in terms of sentence construction here, but the meaning is quite clear. In this is a marvel or a wonder. This is certainly noteworthy. In this, meaning the case he's going to summarize now in what follows. The gar seems to stick out here, but it can also mean sometimes more like now or to be sure. This, to be sure, is something to be amazed about. And then what is it? What's the thing that causes such amazement? Hati humes uk oidate pothen estin. That you do not know where he is from. Kai. Here some have suggested Kai has more of the force of and yet anoixen mu tus ophthalmus. You don't know where he's from, and yet he opened my eyes. Now this is still the former blind man speaking in verse 31. Oidamen. Now he speaks in the first person plural as if he's speaking for at least the common people, if not the people of Israel. We know that hamartolon hotha as uk akue. We know that God does not hear, does not listen to, in the genitive following akuo, hamartolon, sinners. We know that God does not hear sinners, but rather, on the contrary, if antis, if someone theos abase, someone is pious or devout, if someone should be pious or devout, and tothelema autu poie tutu akue, and poie, and does his will, that is the will of God, this one he hears. That is, God hears this kind of person, a pious one who does his will. Verse 32. Ek tu ionos uk ekusthe hoti e neoxentis ophthalmus tiflu gegene menu. Here the ionos would be sort of all of history, our age, from time immemorial, so to speak. Often in the English versions, this is simply coupled with the uk and then translated as never. In the whole time of recording such things, it has never ekusthe been heard. It was not heard, aorist passive, that tis anyone a neoxen opened the eyes of a person who was born blind. Just as a footnote here, this is correct. In all of the canonical Old Testament, there's no record of a blind person being healed. The closest thing that we know of it from the biblical account comes from the Deuterocanonicals, the Apocrypha in Tobit, where he regains his own sight, and yet he was not born blind. So even including that story, the man's summary still holds true. 33. E me ein hutos para theou. So if he was not from God, he would not be able to do anything. That is the double negative there reinforcing itself. Unless he was from God, he would not be able to do anything. Verse 34. Apakrithezon kai epon auto. And they said to him, they answered and said to him, En hamartiais su egenethes holos. In sin you were born, holos, completely, wholly, utterly. Kai su didaskes hemas. And you are teaching us. Kai ex ebalon auton exo. And they threw him out. This is at least threw him out of their presence, the audience he had with them. But given the material back earlier in the passage, their parents' fears of Jewish retaliation or from the authorities, this probably means from their religious community as well, from the synagogue. That he was born completely in sin probably suggests that they too regarded his blindness as an indication that there had been some sin on the part of his parents or something before his birth that caused his blind condition. The sad thing is that if they have rejected a teacher who is sinless and have rejected a teacher who was born in sin, there is no third category of someone who's going to be able to come and speak with them. And then you can see the strong words that follow at the end of the chapter. Okay. Ekuzen Jesus hoti ex ebalon auton exo. So Jesus heard that they cast him outside. And hiron auton apen. And finding him, he said. Now, strangely, Bedeg puts this use of horisco in the to come upon someone without actually seeking. And I don't know why they would say that here when it seems clear that Jesus is taking the initiative to actually locate this man and speak these words to him. So he seems to be the good shepherd who seeks the lost. Su pistues eston huionton anthropu. Asks him a question which seems strangely out of the blue in terms of what's happened so far. Do you believe, su pistues, do you believe in ton huiontu anthropu, the Son of Man? 36, apakrithe ekenos kai apen, and that one, that is the former blind man, answered and said, kai tis esten, and who is he, kyrie, hina pistuso, eis auton. That is, tell me who he is in order that I might believe in him. Epen auto ha Jesus, Jesus said to him, kai he orakas auton, kai halalon metasu ekenas esten. Both of these are true, the kai, both and. You have seen him, and ha, the one speaking with you is that one. Is he. Hade Efe. And he said, Efe from Phemi is not used often in the Gospels, but it's a common Greek word, certainly, for reporting discourse. And here, too, it introduces direct discourse. The aorist and the imperfect in the third person singular look exactly the same, so it's hard to tell which tense is intended, but it's usually not that significant. Pistuo Kyrie, I believe. I left untranslated the Kyrie back in verse 36, and it's interesting to note both of these here. Is there a switch from the first one being the sort of polite, who is he, sir, and this one, I believe, Lord, with a capital L? It certainly seems like his attitude, his knowledge has changed, And so what he might mean by calling Jesus Kyrie could have changed as well. But it's interesting to see those two and the play between them together here. Kai prosekinesin auto, and he worshipped him. Proskineo, the simple form kineo, has the idea of kissing. So you can see how worship comes in with pros, to sort of bend down and kiss someone's feet or something like that. I think Bedag says through word or gesture to indicate one's reverence to another person. Here this is clearly then reverence given to Jesus as Messiah, as Son of Man, as the one sent from God. Verse 39, Kai epen ha Jesus, eis krima ego eis ton kosmon tuton elthon. And Jesus said, eis here indicates his purpose, for krima, judgment. We'll come back to that in a second. I, into the world, into this world, I came. Now, to explain what he means by judgment here, hina, so that, hoi, me blepontes blepozen, so that those who are not seeing, present tense, blepozen, may see, present subjunctive. Kai hoi blepontes, again, present participle, and those who are seeing, tifloi genontai, here aorist subjunctive of genomai, might become blind. So that those who are seeing, or perhaps in this case think they are seeing, believe they are seeing, might become blind. The krima here then means not so much judgment as condemnation, but judgment as separation into two groups. And this is not a contradiction that the Son of Man didn't come to judge the world, to condemn the world, but to save it. But clearly, his presence divides the world into those who believe, that is, know and see him, and those who reject, remain in their blindness, refuse to believe him. Verse 40, Ekuzan ek ton pharisaion tauta, hoi met autu ontes kai epon auto. So, of the Pharisees, those who were with them, heard these things, ekuzan tauta, kai epon auta, and they said to Jesus, to him, me kai hemes tifloi esmen? Remember, me expects a no answer. You're not saying that we are blind, are you? Surely not even we are, or we are not also blind, the kai hemes. Epon autois ha Jesus. And Jesus said to them, e tifloi ete, uk an echete hamartion. Here we have a contrary to fact conditional. You have a with a past tense indicative and then on with indicative. If you were blind, you would have no sin or sinfulness. But now, legete hoti blepomen, but now, because you say, but now you say that we see, he hamartia hemon mene, your sin remains. That last word is very ominous for readers of John's Gospel, because it's used so often in a positive sense of things that endure forever. Here it sounds like this sin of theirs will remain with them forever. And certainly the implication is, if you refuse the only one who can give you sight, how will you ever gain your sight? If you refuse him alone who brings the knowledge of the truth, the light of salvation, then what hope is there for you? But because these men lie and deceive themselves, their sin remains. Okay, there's a lot there, and the story is so good, one is tempted to wonder how we can possibly make a message out of this that doesn't simply detract from it. Certainly, there's a beautiful story here about, again, letting the blind man sort of represent humanity, that what is it that can possibly separate one from Jesus, from the truth, the light that he brings. He comes to the blind man. He finds him. He doesn't wait for the blind man to say anything, to prove anything, to demonstrate any faithfulness. He works a miracle of healing on him, sending him to the pool. When he's been rejected by family and friends, Jesus seeks him out again, welcomes him into his presence. Remember, he says, "The one who comes to me, I will ekbalo. I will certainly not cast out." So gathers him into his flock, shows him care, and brings him then to a faith in him as the Son of Man. The chapter is rich with themes that we've been exploring the last several Sundays, but also that have deep connections with our own celebration of Lent, the themes of light and darkness, of water, both in terms of thirst, water bringing life, and water in connection with the new baptism. Raymond Brown points out that in the early church for centuries there was a very close connection between baptism and enlightenment. I think that's an image we don't use much today, but certainly you see how in this chapter those two things are brought together. As someone is washed in the one who is sent, he comes to the true ability to see and to know the truth. I hope that going through the chapter has suggested some themes that you might explore. The one that I keep coming back to is the idea of knowing what you know, who knows what at what point, and who brings a knowledge of the truth. Lent is also not a bad time, perhaps, for us to take stock and ask, what do I really know? What do I truly know about who Jesus is? And then to hear Lent's call to return to the Lord, to, with humility and honesty of this former blind man, to say, who is he? Tell me, Lord, so that I might truly believe. Well, thank you.